Another edition of CFTV Live. I'm sorry to the podcast listeners out there. They missed like the first two words of that. But I was a little slow with the trigger. So I apologize to everybody out there listening to the podcast right now, which if you're listening to the podcast, you're not listening to this correctly.
Yeah, this is, it has TV in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be like listening to the Grey's Anatomy on the radio. Like you're really missing a whole large spectrum of what the intention of the episode is for. I mean, you can do it.
I can honestly say I've never listened or I've never watched Grey's Anatomy even, so.
See, I really jumped out the bandwagon a long time ago. It was just a television show that involves a large visual component. That's what I was going with, was Grey's Anatomy.
So you're off the Grey's Anatomy bandwagon, but you're still on The Walking Dead.
Still on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really invested a lot of time into The Walking Dead. I went about trying to catch up from season two, or I caught up from season two to now in like 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I really invested a lot of time in The Walking Dead. And now what's weird is I went from binge watching a show to watching it once a week, and it feels like I don't know anything when I come back to the episode. I don't know if anyone's ever done that before, whether it's with like Breaking Bad or something like that, where you watch the first three seasons in like 6 days.
Yeah.
And then you watch one episode and you have to wait a whole another 6 weeks for another 47 minutes of television programming. Really feel like you're missing the entire boat on this. And we really got sidetracked.
Today's episode of CFTV Live is brought to you by Agrigold.
I was going to say the wrong side.
Jeff is repping his Agrigold pullover today.
Yeah.
They are the presenting sponsor of CFTV Live every single week. We wouldn't be able to do this without them. And we are very appreciative of everything that they do for us here.
I'm sure there's a lot of thank you statements to Agrigold right around this time of year, because farmers get to see the results from planting, you know, 6-7 months ago. They finally get the one large payoff of this, you know, 3 weeks of hellacious amounts of work. But this is when I feel like it's all, once they're able to take the boots off and like breathe for a second, I bet that's probably one of the greatest feelings of all time.
Yeah, and then they can get us cool Agrigold shirts.
They can, like this one,
like that one. Iowa State winning streak comes to an end.
Yep.
Against the Mountaineers. I don't know that the start of the game could have been much worse.
They could have given up that second touchdown. I mean, if we're talking like a grade scale, it was like a D minus. Like it wasn't an F.
So
like
it couldn't have been much worse. It could have been a little bit more worse, but it couldn't have been much more.
But what's funny is if you erase those first 3 minutes, that's Iowa State football that has been the past 4 weeks. I mean, take the first 3 minutes out and that big touchdown. I mean, granted, they got hit over the top, and we're going to go over that again. Which Kevontae White? What is it?
Kevontae White. I think it's Kevin White's brother.
Yeah, yeah. I did know that, which is funny that one got Kevontae and the other got Kevin.
Yeah.
One is monumentally easier to remember. Anyway, but outside of getting beat one time deep later in the game, the rest of the game was Iowa State playing Iowa State football. Mm-hmm. And I think what was really shocking was the fact that the three things, I mean, if you were to tell me that if I were to just kind of encapsulate the winning streak, and even if you take back to Akron and go Akron, Texas, and all the way through, the things that Iowa State has done well is they protected the football, they've not been penalized, and that they've prevented the big play. Well, in the first 3 minutes of that game, they got beat on the third play of the game, just hammered over the top because Greer has a cannon, and then they got penalized, I believe, twice in the first three, like in the first 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and then they turned the ball over on what, the second offensive snap, and the three things that Iowa State hadn't done, they did in the first 3 minutes, and so it was weird, not necessarily to see that like they're human, but it was just like this isn't something we've seen since September.
Yeah.
So it was just odd to see right away, and then all of a sudden they kind of gathered themselves back up, and granted 20-0 is not bad or not great, but they still managed to contain everything and just let the flow of the game continue and then make adjustments and roll.
Well, and that's what, going into halftime, you're down 20-3, you get the field goal on your last drive, and then West Virginia misses one as time expires in the first half. I was sitting there, I was like, you know what? This is doable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've stopped their offense for the most part. All we need to see is Iowa State's offense move the ball a little bit. And then we saw that on their first drive of the second half. They go right down and score a touchdown. And then I don't know. I think that there was some inconsistency. Like, there's a lot of inconsistency with the offense. Like, we saw them have so much success throwing the ball to the edge But then they'll throw the ball to the middle three times in a row, and it'll just be incomplete or dropped. And I'm like, okay, well, you guys have hit on how many in a consecutively on the edge, mm-hmm. and it's just like that was frustrating to me.
Well, I think for me watching that, it's not so much in the passing game, because the passing game wasn't great, but it wasn't awful.
No, I mean, no, and that's
in, being able to move the ball in the air. It wasn't awful. I think my issue is in being able to establish some kind of consistent run game in between the tackles. And the fact that, I mean, you don't look at this roster and go, man, this is going to be a downhill mm-hmm. run blocking team, because you have Julian Good-Jones, who's a redshirt sophomore, who's completing his first year at center ever. And you have, to his left, Robbie Garcia, who's played offensive line for 13 months ever. And you have, to his right, Josh Kniffel, who is a redshirt sophomore, is playing his first varsity snaps ever this season. And then once then you get out to the to the right tackle, and it's Sean Foster, who's I believe 19 and is in his second season in college, which is first snaps again ever. And then Jake Campos. All right, cool, we got Campos. That's a run blocker. The rest of them are kind of, they're guys that are learning how to do what they're doing. But my issue is not necessarily in the fact that there isn't there's the lack of a dynamic run game downhill. It's that there's not a couple go-to plays that, even when things are all over the place, that it can't be done. And so, you know, Iowa has that stretch zone, and granted, Iowa's offense is a lot more experienced than, or Iowa State's, or Iowa's offensive line is a lot more experienced than Iowa State's offensive line. So give it two more years, then Iowa State has this. I feel like Iowa State's going to have the same thing. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of a metaphor, Iowa has that stretch zone, and they go, everything has gone to shit. I know exactly that, or I know one thing that's going to work. No matter what happens, we can come back to this. It's Old Faithful. Right now, Iowa State doesn't have a run game that's Old Faithful. They've got pass game. They've got quick bubble screens. If you get Alan Lazard or Hakeem Butler just beating the hell out of some corner, throw it to Trevor Ryan or Deshaunte Jones or David Montgomery and just let them run, I mean, that's going to get you six. Just, you know, anytime something goes down, you can pretty much come back to that whenever. But they don't have a run game version of that. And I feel like to this point in the season, there should be something that these guys would understand. Yeah. I can do this really well. And I don't know if that's not there, or if they just haven't found it yet, or if they're not capable of doing it. I don't think it's the latter. I think it's they just haven't found what that is yet.
Well, and even last season, it seemed like at the end of the year, they had a couple plays that they could go to, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes that you knew you were going to get 4 or 5 yards right. out of it. And right now they can get a couple yards, but as much as anything, it's because David Montgomery is just really freaking good.
Right. It's just that he's going to bounce off four people right. and going to end up going. Now, to be fair, once they play Oklahoma State, I believe they've played Oklahoma State this week. They have played all of the top, outside of Kansas, they've played the entire top two-thirds of the Big 12 in the past, like, 6 weeks. So they've had just a hellacious gauntlet of really good team after really good team. And then what West Virginia's look provides, and we don't have anything on here because I wanted to get to a couple different plays, but what West Virginia provides is they run that 3-3-5 stack. And when you run a 3-3-5 stack, there's a lot that you can do differently. And mm-hmm. Iowa State can, I mean, they kind of run something moderately similar, but West Virginia's been doing it forever. And because they've been doing it forever, the basics of what that defense is, the guys don't have to learn that. And they know that they can start throwing in a crap ton of wrinkles. And again, you want an Old Faithful play, and you want that to actually be there. But what I think, you were talking about 20-3, it doesn't feel that bad. The metaphor that I used is, and say what you will about the person, but Floyd Mayweather, the boxer, will always, if you watch any Floyd Mayweather fights, and I'm not a huge boxing fan, so I've only seen a couple, but every fight that he's in, it feels like he's going to get KO'd in the fifth round, because the first four rounds, he's terrible. I mean, think about the McGregor fight. It's the one that kind of sticks out right away. Conor McGregor comes out, and he wins rounds 1, 2, and 3, and Floyd looks like he's completely outclassed. What he's doing is just going, all right, let me see what you do. I want to see your strategy. Show me what your strategy is. I'm just going to stay within arm's reach. Give me a chance, and then once you've really, you know, unloaded the barrel and you put all the chips on the table and said, this is what I'm going to do, you're going to go, okay, well, this is what you're going to do. I'm going to make this adjustment, go after you, and we're going to find a way to do it, which is what Iowa State's done every single game in the second half. I think, what was the statistic, like 168-40 in the second half?
I don't think they've allowed double-digit points in the second half since
Iowa.
Iowa. Yeah.
So they do a really good job of letting the opponent empty their clip and then go, okay, this is what you're doing. I understand. I can see everything, every attack angle that you're going to take. You're doing it. And then I'm going to make your adjustments off that, because there's not, you're not going to install a new play at halftime.
Yeah.
You're going to, once you get to halftime, midway through the second quarter, midway through the first quarter, once you've put everything on the table, you kind of just have to pick up and try and reorganize what you're doing. You can't just like, all right, now we're going to run this play and we've never practiced it before, but we're going to do it. So you can kind of see that Iowa State takes that patient approach, which is,
so
again,
you're saying that they can't put in the annexation of Puerto Rico
at
halftime.
Not going to throw that in. I mean, you maybe. Maybe they throw the double reverse pass at halftime.
Yeah.
That they've never practiced before. I don't know. But for me, it just seems like Iowa State is, they've got that patience to them. They've got that poise. And it didn't feel like it was out of control. In the same light, you can't start off the game. Because think back to Texas Tech, the first drive of the game. Granted, Texas Tech lucked themselves into that. But you can't throw an interception the first 2 seconds of the game and then dig yourself back out against good teams like West Virginia is.
One thing I did kind of want to bounce off you is this, something that Rob and I were talking about yesterday on our podcast. When do you think that the offensive line is right now, they're not able to open huge holes or anything like that. Is that a big part of the reason that Mike Warren hasn't really been on the field? I know Matt Campbell said last night he's a little banged up, but I mean, it seems like that one year that he had, he was really good. That wasn't a great offensive line, but they did a serviceable job of being able to open holes in the run game. Whereas this past year, or last year, and then this year, they can't open those, you know, wide running lanes. And he's as good, he can be really good when he gets through that first level, but if he can't get through that first level, he's not. It's like, not like David Montgomery, right, where he's going to bounce off guys.
Well, if I remember correctly, that year that he had a really good season, he had a senior center in Jameson Lock, and he had Oni Amoile at guard, who has been on the Raiders practice squad for the past 2 years now, and who's a 750-pound squatter. And they've got dudes, I mean that literally, it's a 755-pound squatter. That's insane.
Yeah.
But they had guys that are just able to move people out of the way.
Wendell Taiese,
yeah. Got Wendell Taiese, Oni Amoile, and then a center, or a senior center.
Yeah.
And so you can get your two maulers in the right spot and just move people out of the way. So you can... That's a lot easier of a job for a running back than it is when you have to create your own stuff. And clearly, if you have a bigger hole, it's easier to run
through. Yeah.
But with – I think that Warren is much more of a downhill – he doesn't move laterally as well.
Yeah.
And
he's like a one-cut guy almost.
Right. And he would be more comfortable out of like an I set. And just running more downhill, sort of, you know, what – not like the – what's the Hill kid at Oklahoma State? It's not the same. It's
Justice Hill.
It's not the same as that guy. He's more like, you know, from last year, like a Deontay Foreman from Texas, where Deontay Foreman never went this way. He was that way. Granted, Mike's not as big or as quick, but he's much more of a downhill guy. So he needs to have the capacity to set things up and have linemen move people out of the way, where Dave Montgomery is, he's a freak. He's just going to find a way to get just do what he's going to do.
Yeah.
In the same light, is Warren a little bit banged up? Is he... You know, does he need a little bit more help to get downhill? Sure. But also, you know, who is the number two shooting guard for the Chicago Bulls? Who the hell knows? I mean, it's going to be when a guy is just better than you, you're not going to play as much. And I think that's with Dave Montgomery, is he's just better. And I mean, it's bad to say.
See, I get exactly what you're saying, but it seemed like even early in the season, they'd throw him out there for two plays, you know. But we haven't seen him at all. I don't think he's even been on the field in three or four games.
Well, and Sheldon Crony, I think, has taken a lot of the reserve snaps.
Which was weird, too, because Sheldon wasn't on the depth chart this week, which he'd been pretty much all season before this.
So
I don't really know what the deal is with that whole situation.
I don't either. Yeah. But, I mean...
I just wanted to bounce that off you, because we were thinking about that yesterday.
They need to find something, and again, obviously, I'm not saying, hey, you need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Because I believe that the staff has been doing this. Every offensive staff is going to be like, all right, what do we do well? So I don't think this is really new or revolutionary thinking, but trying to find at least a play, whether it's inside zone or whether it's a gap scheme, or whether it's that power sweep that we saw earlier in the year, something that you can come back to and just get, if Kemp ever gets unsettled, which I've not seen yet. Or if Montgomery just needs something to kind of calm him down, to get him going downhill, or if the offensive line needs a little confidence booster, if you can have something that gets them back on target, then, you know, hopefully that's there going into what are less – I mean, this – Oklahoma State's a solid defense. They present much less of a schematic problem than West Virginia does. So I think the younger guys not having to completely relearn a new defense – it's going to be better for them. But then you go into Baylor and Kansas State, those two defenses are not what they've seen the past 6 weeks, take their save for Texas Tech and Kansas. They're going to be in the bottom half schematically of just being able to do what they need to do.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone.
Okay. The couple things that I wanted to go over, and these aren't like great plays from a what are we doing perspective, but this is just what West Virginia does well, like pointing out the fact that West Virginia is also a good team. And yeah. So what Iowa State's going to do here, this is the long touchdown to Kevontae. Damon White. So you're going to have, this is, Iowa State is going to bring five. So you can see that these two, this is Joel Lanning, this is Marcel Spears, they're going to both come on this play. So West Virginia sets their running back to this side of the field. West Virginia is also going to set, so whenever you set your running back to one side of the field, it means you're probably going to put the man side over here, which means that this tackle is going to be responsible for this. You're going to have one of these two guards are going to sort out this guy. Then everything else is going to slide away from it. So you're going to set your protection to make sure that any weird action comes through. What that means is this tailback is going to be on the second of the linebackers that comes through, because these three are probably going to be responsible for these three. So I'm going to make sure that I somehow sort that out. So from a protection standpoint, West Virginia goes one for one on each one of those spots, and this backside guard right here is just there to help. So you can see this like the hat that I had arrowed at. And then Joel Lanning is one-on-one with a running back. Well, the tailback, I don't know who the tailback is, what number 32's name is, but this is a terrific job of just stepping up and sticking a protection. And Joel tries to use his hands later to get off of everything, but this is, it's just great protection. I mean, there's nothing you can say about it, is that they passed everything off. You've got a one-on-one battle up here. What you need to win, which I believe that's number 19. Bailey ends up winning, but not in enough time. So West Virginia just does a really good job, and they've done this all season, that they're going to take shots. Now, Iowa State, again, knows that, so they're going to try and keep everything underneath it. They're going to try and keep everything underneath, and they always like to play that three deep, five under. Well, if you're bringing two, then you can't go three deep, five under. You can play kind of a combination three deep or one deep, and you're going to have to change those numbers, because five and three is eight, and that means you can only rush three.
See, and it's almost like they didn't expect them to try and work in like this part of the field as much, in that, you know,
the underneath routes.
Yeah, because I don't really remember them even attempting to throw like that short stuff like that.
Well, they didn't necessarily attempt to throw that much stuff, but they did give Iowa State reason to think that. So one of the things that West Virginia, again, being a good offense. So Iowa State, this is when you see a safety playing in the middle of the field, likely that's not going to be a guy that spins one way or the other. It's not the NFL. They're not going to spin a ton of coverage. A lot of times, if they're going to put someone in the middle of the field, they're going to give that safety not 10,000 things to think about and spinning to one coverage.
Yeah.
Occasionally, teams will. And teams that are really, that try and run funky defenses, they will end up spinning a guy. But this is going to be middle. And then actually, this is going to be Damonte Ruth, and he's going to play all the way back, and he's going to be responsible for a deep third. And so this is going to be Peavy. Whoa. Oops. So it's going to be, or Ruth is going to be a deep third. Peavy's going to be a deep third. And this is, I believe, Reggie Wilkerson is going to be playing a deep third too. So they've got these guys that are bringing pressure. And so I'm going to have, this is going to play sort of, Kamari Cotton-Moy is going to play sort of a flat play. And then we're going to have these guys settling underneath. What West Virginia does is they run this cluster formation, and anytime that, so this guy's responsibility, anytime you're playing a zone, rule number one is don't get beat over the top.
Yeah.
But rule number two is don't let a guy run free. And so what West Virginia does is they're going to watch this. This is going to be the big home run post here. That's White, number two there. And then Sills is going to run underneath here. So this, they're giving Wilkerson a choice, and he's got to either collapse this, which opens up in the back, or he's got to stay back, which is going to put Peavy, which is, I believe they're going to run some type of hitch here, which is going to put this, there's a lot of space open. So Wilkerson has a really tough decision. He's got to play up or he's got to play back. So what Wilkerson, I believe they set this defense up to do, is Wilkerson's going to trust to take away anything over the top, because if they're running every single receiver from this point this way, which they do, then there's no reason that Damonte Ruth has to play back at an angle. So what Wilkerson attempts to do is he's going to play what he thinks, I believe, is going to play down here, and assuming that Ruth is going to run with whatever vertical threat they have. Well, West Virginia's just good. So you can see that everything kind of clusters away, and once we get everything broken by, well, this is Damonte Ruth. Damonte Ruth was, I believe, understanding, but he had like one hitch of a second of thinking, maybe I need to settle down out of my zone. All of a sudden, Reggie Wilkerson has to play back off of that underneath route. Ruth is playing in a trail position. And if this ball is anywhere else, Reggie Wilkerson makes this play. I mean, his hand, even though he was badly out of position, his hand misses that ball by like 4 feet.
Yeah.
And so if this ball isn't absolutely perfect, that's a big, whew, that was close. But it's a perfect ball. It's a great route. It gets two guys that are badly out of position, or that it forces them to get out of position, and they just complete the play. So a lot of times you can say like, yeah, Iowa State's defense played poor, kind of. Just sometimes you just got to tip your cap to the other team and be like, hey, you guys did a pretty good job, especially when the distraction threat is the guy that leads the country in touchdown receptions. And so you can't let David Sills just run free. Mm-hmm. So Wilkerson, even if it's two steps, has to play down. We don't have the full coach's clip of it, so you can only assume what was going on based on his positioning. But Wilkerson can't just let him run free. He's got to play down to Sills, and then he's got to play back up over the top to play with White. So, again, like, Iowa State played for the most part, and this is going to happen. You're going to play good teams. You're going to get beat every once in a while. And so if this happens, say, against Oklahoma State, you hope that you're able to, one, get pressure on Rudolph faster than this, and they're not going to pick it up, and two, that you're able to stay at least a little bit longer in coverage or make that tip.
What I was going to say is that Oklahoma State, that's what they live on.
The issue with Oklahoma State is that these two guys for the Cowboys are not their starters. Their right guard, right tackle are, I believe, are both backups for the beginning part of the season. Uh-huh. And Oklahoma's secondary is just really actually pretty poor.
Yeah.
So that's where Oklahoma State made most of their hay, is just throwing and making sure that everything stays down the field.
Yeah.
But these two guys, Jaquan Bailey is not going to be in a one-on-one with a guy who has a pretty decent pass set, gets everything stuck. That's a pretty decent job by that tackle. If you have a one-on-one with Oklahoma State's guy, then you're going to be able to get him to pressure, or you're going to make Greer throw this ball now instead of him loading up and being able to transfer the weight all the way to his front foot.
And that was a big difference in the end of that Oklahoma State-Oklahoma game, is that late Oklahoma was able to get a lot of pressure on mm-hmm. Rudolph that kept him from being able to just hit on these long balls.
And most of it came from Oklahoma State's right side.
Yeah.
And so this, they're,
I think Oklahoma was playing true freshmen in the secondary by the end of
the
game.
They had three true freshmen in the secondary because of either ejections or injuries. And Mason Rudolph is, I mean, he's very good. Yeah. And I don't know, is the state of Washington, is he?
James Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't he get hurt in the
game? He got hurt. Yeah, I didn't know if his.
He came back, though, I think.
Because I didn't see if, because he wasn't on the field for their final few plays. So I don't know.
I have not heard anything about that this week. But.
Well, hopefully he's not playing.
Yeah.
Because he's real good.
Yeah, they might have the best receiving corps in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they got, number four, big tall kid? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what makes their offense so good, is they're just all huge.
Like, that looks,
their quarterback's huge. Their receivers are huge. Everybody's huge.
That looks, that sounds familiar to what Iowa State is.
Yeah.
I mean, so they have Rudolph is a much bigger deep threat than Kempt is to huck the ball a long ways. But anyway, like I said, you can just every once in a while chalk up, hey, good job offense. Now, the other one, there's a couple times when that wasn't actually the case where Iowa State, I mean, just having been on the field, let's do this one. Iowa State having been on the field for a really long time and being in a bad situation, they didn't make the greatest plays.
Yeah.
And so this is that third and 17. You can see that there's 2 minutes and 40 some seconds left. It's not a great situation for Iowa State. This is when they had been out of timeouts. They're trying to kill the clock. Just make sure that everything, stays in front of them. Because if they get this stop, they force West Virginia to kick a field goal. Maybe if they keep it back here, then they may force them to punt. And they give themselves another chance because this is right after the Butler drop.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And so it was right after the Butler drop, which I think was less of a Butler drop and more of a Kemp didn't lead him.
Yeah.
It was just a miscommunication on where the zones are. But Iowa State had been on the field for a significant portion of the second half and the entire game. And so this one is a good example of what not to do, and not because it was a horrible job, but what we have been spoiled with watching Iowa State play, because this doesn't usually happen. So DeAndre Payne is number one. DeAndre Payne's the corner. That's DeAndre Payne right here. And so let's rewind that for a second. So knowing that DeAndre Payne's up there on the top, West Virginia knows, or Iowa State knows in this point that it's probably going to be a run play. So there's not a whole lot of backpedal. When you look at these guys, if it was a true run or if it's a true pass situation, it wasn't 2 minutes and 40 seconds left in the game and they want to run, then you'd see him probably backpedal a little bit farther. So he's playing very flat-footed. He's not trying to really run with anyone. And so this, I don't remember the exact term, but I think he gets a little, one of the secondary coaches that we had called it nose heavy, where he's trying to get to the football. He's trying to make a tackle. Well, this, by all accounts, this should be tackled here, like that. Yeah. I've got Kamari Katamoya. I want to funnel into Kamari, and I've got Willie Harvey that's going to be able to make the tackle down here, and Kamari's going to make the tackle in the open field. Well, again, talking about Iowa State, us being spoiled with how good Iowa State plays on defense, this is an example of not doing the perfect play. So what he has to understand, and he does understand this, he just gets to it too late, this guy is not a dead player. He's going to come back and try and block him, understanding that he's going to try and just get anybody on him. So he knows that, shoot, this guy's going to come block me. I've got to get myself outside and funnel everything back to help.
Yeah.
Because again, what we've praised, or what everyone's been praising the corners for, is turning everything back to the middle. That's what makes a defense really good, is when you get an interior lineman like Ray Lima, like Vernell Trent, you get interior guys to push them out, and then you get corners that funnel everything back in. Then your tacklers, which are all over the field right now, your tacklers have a capacity to get the ball on the ground. Well, this is not a tackling position. He realizes he didn't get outside. He needs to get back outside. Yeah. And so he has to haul ass, and he's trying to get back and get his outside arm free. He does, but at the sticks. So what we have been used to, and what Iowa State has been spoiled with, is as soon as he sees his hips start to go to the sideline, that he sticks his foot in the ground and gets aggressively back up the field. And then he's going to set an edge right here. So which essentially brings the sideline from here, it essentially brings the sideline to there. And so this guy's not able to get outside, and then once this sideline is established here, then I've got, like I said, Willie Harvey's going to pursue, Kamari Katamoya is going to pursue, and all of a sudden, it's tackled right there.
So in other words, he's essentially, he takes two, like, he's like two steps too far to one side, and then is a split second late recognizing he needs to get back.
Right, and this is how quickly it becomes a good from a good play to a bad play in college football. Right now, he's got to see, so hips are starting to go to the sideline. He's got to see, all right, I've got to play contain. One, two, three. It's three steps. And that goes from three steps of him being back here to him getting his hips starting to square them down the field and becomes a runner rather than trying to evade side to side. All of a sudden, you get past the first down sticks. And it's just that quick. And so, that was the first play. Wilkerson probably had something similar, like maybe one or two steps where it wasn't great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a terrible play. Where on this one, DeAndre Payne doesn't do the best job. It's not a horrible job. I mean, the corner shouldn't be the one that makes that tackle, but the corner does have to be the one that forces everything back to help, especially when there's your tackler. So it's not ideal. Also, one of the funny little things about watching film is if you ever just like watch the sidelines, that's defensive coordinator John Haycock. If you just watch John Haycock at the end of this play, I think he shares the reaction of everyone else. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought even when Iowa State got that ball back with on the drive before this, I want to say there's like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. I was like, man, I really feel like they're going to go down the field and score here. Like just based on what we'd seen from them so far. And then they'd moved the ball pretty well even on the couple drives before that, even though I don't think they scored on either one of them.
Well, they got themselves in the red zone, but they didn't get themselves in the end zone.
Yeah.
And that was – you can partially attribute that to, again, not having a great amount of push from the offensive line, just because if you go from – like I said, if you go from left tackle to right tackle, you've got Jake Campos, really good, potential NFL player. Then you got Robbie Garcia – pretty good, but he's still green. Like, he's played Texas last week or last year, which was like game 7.
Yeah.
And then he's played 7 plus what? 7 games this year, 14 games.
And even then, I don't think he played in very many of those games.
So
he was just
maximum of, say, 11 games on offensive line. So he's good, but not, I mean, he's not going to be a world beater. Then you've got at center Julian Good-Jones, who's again a redshirt sophomore, and offensive linemen need time to just get stronger, like just be able to move another human being.
Right.
Right guard is Josh Kniffel, who, again, redshirt sophomore, mm-hmm. needs time to get stronger.
Was playing junior college ball a year ago.
Right. And then on the right tackle is Sean Foster, who's a redshirt freshman, just yeah. needs more time to get stronger. So you've got youth and inexperience, and you don't have guys that are just able to just push people out of the way. And so with that, you need a little bit of help. And or you need to be either technicians with the offensive line, or you need a little bit of help with number 32, just making every play, which he makes almost every play, but you can't assume that that guy is going to make every single missed tackle into the end zone. He pretty much already does. I believe two plays before this was him getting down to the 1 yard line from the, like the 11, breaking like nine tackles, yeah. another vintage Dave Montgomery run.
He like ducked way down and ran underneath two guys.
And almost. Snuck almost inside the sideline.
Yeah.
Well, this is the one that ends up being what looks like a read by the offensive line, but I think this is a miscommunication with these two and this group. So what it looks like is that this is intended to go the other way, but knowing what breaks down, you know where it ends up needing to be. So this is Dave Montgomery's going to take a first step, and he's going to come back this direction. And then Kyle Kemp is also going to, a lot of times in a zone read, you're not following the guy because there's no distraction for right. it. Kyle Kemp ends up running the same direction.
See, and I think what Matt Campbell said on his – you can kind of see it here too. It says on his – said on his radio show last night is that he just didn't have a good handle on the ball. And so, like, when he tried to give it to David, it was like it almost popped out.
Mm-hmm.
And he just grabbed it and tried to do whatever he could do with it at that point.
Yeah. So if you ever see a quarterback follow a tailback and his name is not like Cam Newton
mm-hmm. –
it's probably not a designed play. Because anytime you say you were actually running a zone read, I think a lot of people assume that this was a zone read. Say it was a zone read. What we're actually reading, it looks similar to, what it looks like is going to be a zone read is, well, this guy would be the one that's reading, and you're going to take the offensive line in that direction.
Yeah.
So you're going to leave that one unblocked, and if this guy feels the fact that the offensive line is moving in this direction, and this guy plays over the top, then Dave Montgomery's coming here, and then all of a sudden, since that guy's played down, Kyle Kemp should have basically easy access to the end zone. Well, if you run it back, Kyle Kemp's hips open to this direction. So does the offensive line. So who the guy they would, again, theoretically be reading would be on the backside over here. So it'd be somewhere on the backside. Well, his eyes aren't to this side. His eyes are facing this direction. So this isn't an intended read. This is more than likely going to be a designed give, like you were talking about. So it's not a true zone read. I don't think Tom Manning would call Kyle Kemp from the 1 yard line.
See, and I think if this would have worked, I like David Montgomery versus this guy on the goal line.
Right.
I like that matchup.
He's probably going to try and tuck his way to right there.
Yeah.
Get his shoulders about 4 feet off or 4 inches off the ground and just go at the guy's kneecaps and drive his way in. And so what happens is there's a couple things that happen right here. This still could have theoretically worked. Not ideal, but it bobbles. So watch Sean Foster, who's number 75. He's right there. So Sean Foster gets himself, again, not that strong. He gets one of the phrases that you always hear any coach or offensive line player say is low man wins. Is Sean Foster the low man right here, or is Sean Foster the high man? That's Sean Foster's helmet right there. That's the West Virginia guy's helmet right there.
So, and this is Dylan Sainer, right?
Yeah,
right
Sainer's here, right? On the other side of it. But Sean Foster gets himself blown up.
Yeah.
And so I don't mean blown up in the sack of like, man, you got blown back. I mean literally physically moved up in the air.
It looks like Julian Good-Jones and Kniffel did it a little bit as well.
You know, yeah, it's high hats. But the easiest one to see is
Foster.
Is Foster,
sure. Yeah.
Because that pile right there is caused by Foster getting blown up. So ideally, it doesn't come back. This pile here is the one I'm talking about. Ideally, this pile doesn't happen in the backfield. It happens this way. And so if it were to happen this direction, then you've got Dylan Sainer on a linebacker. You've got Sean Buckner on the defensive end. And you've got probably something like this as a seal. And you've got, for a foot of space, then Dave Montgomery is going to be able to drive himself in the end zone. Well, what happens is whatever is going to be around, Sean Foster got blown back, which allows this guy, who's this linebacker, to splash backwards because there's more space. So this guy is able to splash into that area because Sean Foster got blown out of it. If Foster was right here, you cause an I like to use this term. I don't think a lot of coaches like to use this term. You cause a shit pile. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of times, if you want to create a block, you just put a heap of people in the way. And even if you're not able to get one-to-one, if you've got literally 2.5 feet to go, you just need to cause a pile so someone can't run straight through it. So if Foster doesn't get blown back, this guy isn't able to come off, and that guy is the one that ends up causing Kemp to have to stay outside. And if it were to be possible, you would be able to move the, or if it were to be possible that Foster doesn't get blown up, or even say this play does get, you know, say this play does get busted and that Kemp has to do it. If this is still sealed here, you've got Montgomery, Seenbuckner, and Sainer all on basically the same guy, and Kemp can just kind of tuck this way.
Yeah.
And he gets hit into the end zone. So granted, it's a blown play. It doesn't look like it. I can tell you it's not a zone read. They weren't trying to say, all right, let's give Kyle Kemp the ball on the 1 yard line. It was a busted play.
I wish I'd grabbed the play that came after this, because they did give it to David, and he got stuffed essentially,
right.
Trying to reach the ball in.
And I didn't see that play, but I'm assuming it's something to do with that.
It was almost it looks almost the exact same as what this one would have been, but
where
he ends up on this side, mm-hmm. and just. Yeah, he just couldn't quite get there.
And
there's too many people.
And like I said, low man wins, and you've got a lot of height with, I mean, Good Jones, I believe, is 6'4". I think Kniffel's 6'5", 6'4".
Yeah, something like that.
Foster's
like
6'8".
Yeah.
You've got a lot of height and not a lot of strength, which you need to be able to rectify how to do the two. Like Kelechi Osemele, he's obviously playing in the NFL. Kelechi's 6'7", but he knows how to play low, and he's strong being able to play low, so he's able to stand a guy up. When you watch High Hat Wins, look how many red helmets are above the white helmets. So West Virginia comes off lower, is more aggressive. All of a sudden, I've got hi-hat, and then Foster is a hi-hat. So right now, I've got two guys that are in a decent position, where Sainer and Seenbuckner are my two guys that are in a decent position, but they end up missing. So Iowa State, again, you can't assume that it's going to be the greatest run-blocking offensive line in the country, mm-hmm. but they do have to understand to do it a little bit better. And again, these guys will improve. They're young, and Tom Manning is one of the best offensive line coaches in college football. It's going to get better, whether it's this year, next year, the year after. It's going to get better. It's just a little bit, you know, you'd like to have it be better already by now.
Yeah.
But I mean, it happens. They're going to improve, and they don't have, like I said, they're stalwart of just making one work. And also, I don't think that people have a right to necessarily criticize the fact, like, why would Tom Manning call a quarterback keep on the one? He didn't.
Yeah.
And I again,
I think it's just because of what the – I mean, when you're watching it in live, you know,
yeah.
like most people obviously aren't able to recognize that as quickly, you know.
And so, like, this is I was watching a Tony Romo clip when he was actually calling a game, and Marcus Mariota threw a ball, what looked like a really horrible pass, and it was just kind of a ground ball on a slant. It was like behind the guy, and the announcer was like, bad pass from Mariota, and Romo was like, no, not so fast. That was. And then he's like broke down the fact of this guy was playing hard coverage over the top. There's a linebacker that's playing underneath. There's no way to bury that ball. It's going to be an incompletion or an interception if I try and force it in there. So that's a great play by Mariota to leave it down and away, just bury it into the ground, even though it looks like it's terrible mechanics, it looks like a bad play, live to play another down. And what Kyle Kemp did there, you may say, well, damn it, give it to 32. Just let him run. We saw what happened with Baker Mayfield. When we played Oklahoma, it was on the 6 yard line. He just tried to give the ball too late to the running back. All of a sudden, it ends up on the ground. It's a turnover. It's second down right now. Mm-hmm. You have at least one more down to try and get the ball in the end zone. If you just take care of the ball, if it doesn't feel comfortable to hand the ball off, don't. So, yeah, it's a broken play, but Kemp saved a horrible play into just a eh. Like,
yeah, you still got points at this.
It's a non-event.
Yeah.
It has become a bad play, became a non-event. And that's one thing that, again, Iowa State has done really well. That's a poised play. That's something bad was going to go wrong. I don't want something horrible to happen. Let's mitigate. Let's take all the bad situations. Let's take the best bad situation, and we're going to do the best bad situation.
So how do you feel about Saturday then?
I pretty much the same as the past couple weeks, where it's a really good team. The TCU, West Virginia, I mean – if Trevor Ryan makes that catch on the wheel route against West Virginia, then Iowa State has a very good chance of continuing their momentum down the field. They score, they win. Maybe. I'm not saying Trevor Ryan lost that game. Just from the razor's edge of winning and losing.
Yeah.
If Marcel Spears doesn't pick that ball off last week against TCU, who knows what TCU does on that drive? So it's just the razor's edge of making one play or missing one play that I think Iowa State played relatively well. They made a couple mistakes in the TCU game, made a couple mistakes in West Virginia. They just different outcomes. Mm-hmm. I feel like this Oklahoma State game is going to be the same thing, where they've got the capacity to slow this the offense down enough. And I think on defense, Iowa State will be able to, Manning will be creative enough to get the ball to Montgomery, to Ryan, to Lazard, to Butler, to get these guys down the field and get points on the board. It's going to be a really tight game because Iowa State is the same caliber team as the top teams in the Big 12. It's just going to come down of will they make a play, will they not make a play. I don't think either team blows either one out. I don't think this game gets outside of the upper 20s because this is just the game that Iowa State wants to play. So I feel the same amount of confidence I did for TCU and the same amount of confidence I did against West Virginia is you're going to have to win this game. Oklahoma State won't hand it to you.
Yeah.
They're not going to come out and think that they're just going to, as they have in years past, where we're Oklahoma State, you're Iowa State, I'm going to roll my helmet on the field and they're just, refs are just going to give me a win. No one feels that anymore against Iowa State.
They obviously played right with Oklahoma State last year, had a lead on them in the fourth quarter when that was this is a considerably better Iowa State team than that one was.
Right, and I think from a focus standpoint, last year's Iowa State team and this year's Iowa State team's opponents view them very differently.
Yeah.
Where the rolling the helmet on the field is, we're just going to show up and Iowa State's not good. Think about Kansas. I mean, no one goes into the Kansas game and is like, all right, we got to bring our A game.
Yeah.
You go, we can bring our C game and probably come out okay.
I mean, Baylor has been destroyed by most everyone.
And they whooped Kansas.
They beat Kansas very, very handily.
So I think that no team is going to take Iowa State lightly, which means they're going to have to earn their way to victories, which means little plays like that, like I said, that Ryan not making the catch or Kemp not delivering that ball to the front side of Butler's shoulder on the route versus Marcel Spears making an interception or Brian Peavy picking the ball off in the red zone or, you know, whatever. Making the play versus not making the play, they're going to give themselves a chance. Will they do it? Hopefully. Will they not? I don't know. But I think this Iowa State team is viewed as one of the top teams in the Big 12, which is really cool to see.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll see you on Saturday.
My pleasure.
It'll be
8 a.m.
8 a.m. I won't be there. Chris will be in charge.
Look, Chris.
I'm going to Columbia Friday night. So
Missouri?
Yeah, I'll be up until like 4 in the morning probably.
Let's hope that's relatively enjoyable.
We will see. Thanks again to AgriGold for being the presenting sponsor of CFTV Live each and every week. We will see you guys next week again on Tuesday at 10:45.